justify closing a school for them to be able to craft that.
Well, they told me this bunch could be rough, so.
Yeah.
But I've just got a couple of rough ones on already.
Well, listen, are you going to any meetings in New York? I think that's kind
of they in front of me in 5 years.
Oh, God. Now, are you in any of the states?
Well, I'm one of Westchester County. Okay. Maybe New Rochelle, which I don't know if you know much about that.
I know that's where Dick Van Dyke moved to. New Rochelle. Worked on the Al Brady show. You know the Sean Paul band?
Sure.
Right. I know you're a little young, right?
Not much. A year?
I gotta always be aware of the cultural gaps.
Well, actually, we're gonna be talking soon because my daughter's a junior. This college thing starting to drive me nuts. So I figure I'll talk to you how to get merit money. Because I'm not gonna get. Forget about the FAFSA. That's just a piece of shit.
Right.
So we have to look at some other angles here. So if you got any tips of words of wisdom.
Well, if you want money for your daughter, you should just stop working. Your wife doesn't work, right?
No.
Oh, you're going to be all set? Stop working.
That's the American way.
So
no, it's all staff or co-parents broke.
When I was accepted to the program, I got a special letter that said, I've been designated for the paid scholarship, 5% of the
kids get
that. Yeah. And it's going to put you in a position for scholarships.
Slideshow, and whenever you're ready, I'll just do my review.
All right. How many slides do you have?
150 for you, because I knew you were here.
Yeah, we tried to keep it under 200.
Is that where the plug is then? Because we're going to solve that problem very quickly. Hey, Charlie, how are you? I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm complaining.
There's nothing.
There we go. So, but no, I'm reading all these books about Mary.
That's a big just address the right. So if you if any reason you would regret not being in the seat office right now, it's a really good one. They want to help her. Certainly help her in the payment for a lot of other places too. Well, I wouldn't think independent she wants to do as a standpoint. It's not that.
Okay.
That's like very strong there. You know, the arts and letters program, they have the top undergraduate business program. But that's not. I mean, they have some of that there. I'll tell you, that's where they invented synthetic rubber, you know, 70 years ago. Liberal arts and business. The business school is very strong.
I was trying to get a look at Carnegie Mellon or Case Western. We'll see. I mean, she's either
one. No, I
know.
What do you think in terms of
yeah, it will be.
Madam President, how are you?
I'm well.
Good seeing you.
How are you?
No, I have my own.
It's not. Ooh, I said it. They're bigger.
I know.
Are these people?
No, you're good. I don't understand what you're doing. Don't.
My shoulder pads.
Hi, Vito.
How are we doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I'm looking for a motion, please, to reconvene the Board of Education meeting.
Motion.
Second.
First.
Second, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Before we go on and vote for the next member of our Board of Education to fill the open board seat, our counsel, Mr. Vito Gagliardi, is here, and I would like to ask Mr. Gagliardi if he would just take a few moments to explain why the Board of Education can actually enter into an executive session to discuss candidates for an open board seat. Gagliardi, please.
Thank you, Madam President. The issue of how to handle the interviewing of candidates for a vacant board seat has been the subject of some discussion and litigation, both in connection with the courts as well as commissioners' decisions. And they've resulted in an effort to balance the public's right to know with the personal issues that a candidate may wish to discuss or may be called upon to discuss, and the board's discussion of the candidates. So the balance is this, that the interviews are to be public, any decision is to be public, but if there's going to be a discussion about the candidate or candidates, that can take place in private. So, for example, if you were going to have a discussion, I don't know who any of the candidates are, so my examples tonight are purely hypothetical, but if you were going to have a candidate who had children in certain classes, right, would that be considered a plus or a minus? If you had a candidate who happened to be a teacher or whose spouse was a teacher and you had collective bargaining negotiations coming up, there'd be a discussion about whether this would impact the individual's position in connection with that. You'd have discussions as to what you were maybe looking to do in connection with any upcoming collective bargaining negotiations. And so those sort of issues are considered to be along the lines of the things that a Board of Education is permitted to discuss in private. So the board's interviews are public, the decision is done in public, but those types of discussions are permitted to be held in private. And so it was with that framework that the board proceeded this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Gagliardi.
Thank you.
Before Mr. McTiernan, our chair of personnel negotiations, reads the resolution which will nominate an individual to serve on the board for the remainder of the year, I would like to say to the four candidates that came out this evening, thank you very much for coming out and taking the time to interview and showing your interest in volunteering for the school board. We really appreciate you being here. I'd also like to mention to you as well that if you don't get selected this evening, I'd like to encourage you to please come back again, either for an open board seat or to run next November for a seat that may open on the Board of Education. There are a few of us on this board that are sitting here right now who were sitting where you are currently sitting, and did not get selected the first or second time that they interviewed for a board seat, and I was one of them. And yet, we came back because we had some interest in serving the school district here in Clinton Township. So, once again, thank you for coming out. You all did a great job. We had an incredibly difficult decision. And please, if you don't get selected tonight, don't be discouraged, but please come back again and give it another try. Mr. McTiernan, please.
Sure. After a good discussion, I'd like to make a resolution. That it be resolved that the Board of Education hereby appoints Maria McHugh as board member.
I'm looking for a motion, please.
Motion.
Motion by Ms. McLaughlin. Second, please.
Second.
Second, Ms. Hand. Any discussion from the board members, please?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that this was not a unanimous decision. It was a very engaging discussion in regards to the responses that the candidates gave, in regards to the questions that were asked. All were very interesting, and all came with some good support. It was, in my opinion, a very difficult decision, and I think any of you would make an excellent candidate for a member of the board.
Anyone else like to make a comment on the board?
I just want to thank all the candidates for coming out. We really appreciate your time, and we hope that you'll come back to a board meeting.
Me too. I would like to thank everyone. I liked all your answers. They were really interesting, and it's really nice to think that there's four of you at the very least that came out and had some really intelligent, wonderful things to say, which means that you should come to board meetings and, you know, listen to what we have to say and maybe come out again next year. That would be great.
Anyone else?
I'd like to echo everyone's sentiments and also indicate, you know, being a board member sometimes can be a thankless job, so it was really encouraging to see everyone come out and actually try to become a member of this team. So thank you very much.
I'd also like to say that it was great to see, you know, four very good candidates come out for a position that would not last that long, you know, for the board. So I think that was really incredible, and I really encourage you to, that if another position opens or you know, want to run, that you should definitely do it, because the four of you were excellent.
Yeah, in time, you can never see it coming, but from time to time, positions do come open on the board. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of people come to the board that way, and I also wanted to say I thought we had four very good candidates, seemed like very nice people, and I want to thank you for being willing to volunteer.
It's also good to see at a time when boards are struggling to get the people to participate that we actually had six people demonstrate interest, two of which were unable to attend tonight. That's just fantastic, I think, for the community.
Okay. Can we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy? Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
No.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Vodaramo?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Congratulations, Mrs. McHugh. Mrs. McHugh, would you please come up to the dais so you can get sworn in, please, and make it official?
So, right then, what I'm going to do is I'm going to recite to you and just repeat after me. And I'll just have some paperwork at the end of the meeting. I just need you to sign what you will repeat back to me. I, Maria McHugh.
I, Maria McHugh.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of New Jersey.
And the Constitution of the State of New Jersey.
And that I will bear true faith.
And I will bear true faith.
And allegiance to the same.
And allegiance to the same.
And to the governments established.
And to the governments established.
In the United States and this state.
In the United States and this state.
Under the authority of the people.
Under the authority of the people.
So help me God.
So help me God.
I am Maria McHugh.
I am Maria McHugh.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I possess the qualifications prescribed.
That I possess the qualifications prescribed.
By the law for the office of a member of a board.
Excuse me.
Well, let's take it from by law.
By law.
For the office.
For the office.
Of member.
Of member.
Of a board of education.
Of a board of education.
Have never been convicted.
Have never been convicted.
Or a crime.
Or a crime.
Or offense listed.
Or offense listed.
NJSA.
NJSA.
18A.
18A.
Colon 12-1.
Colon 12-1.
That I am not disqualified.
That I am not disqualified.
As a voter pursuant.
As a voter pursuant.
To RS.
To RS.
19.
19.
Colon 4-1.
Colon 4-1.
And that I will faithfully.
And that I will faithfully.
Impartially.
Impartially.
And justly perform.
And justly perform.
All the duties.
All the duties.
Of that office.
Of that office.
According to the best.
According to the best.
Of my ability.
Of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, that was so long, your term's almost over already. Hurry up, sit down. Welcome to the board, Mrs. McHugh.
No blooms?
Yeah, no. No confetti either, sorry.
Okay, moving on to the presentation of our demographic study. We have seen a decline in our student enrollment over time in this district. The Board of Education wanted additional information on future enrollment projections to help guide us with what to do with our facilities. And so the Board of Education, commissioned Dr. Richard Gripp to conduct a demographic study for the district. He is here tonight to present to the full board the results of his study. Once Dr. Gripp completes his presentation, I will open the floor to the members of the Board of Education so that they can ask Dr. Gripp any questions that they may have. Once the board has asked all of their questions, we will then have our first recognition of the public of the evening. During this time, members of the public can ask questions that they may have regarding the study. At this time, I would like to introduce Dr. Richard Gripp to the Board of Education, our administration, our staff, and the members of our community. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you very much. So this study was performed over the summer, and this is going to be hopefully about a 20-minute presentation, and I'll try to keep my slides brief so that we keep things moving along. And again, just as a reminder for the board, if we could hold the questions to the end of the presentation, that would be much appreciated. So a little bit of an overview of the company which I represent. It's called Statistical Forecasting. And all we do is what's called school demographic studies. It's a niche field in the School of Demography. And we work with approximately 100 school districts in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. And the firm has been the consultant for the New York City Public Schools, the largest school district in the nation, doing this type of work since 2006 for New York City. And as you can imagine, with a bigger school district, you get to New York City, you see a lot of different issues. So it does help, even when we work with smaller districts like yours, to see some issues that are even experienced at a more urban level. As far as myself, I'm the executive director. Before becoming involved in this field, I was a teacher for about 10 years at Del Martin School up in Morristown, a private boys' school, and also most recently at Bridgewater Raritan Regional as a high school physics and statistics teacher. When I was at Bridgewater Raritan, I was going for my doctorate in a field called psychometrics, which is educational statistics and measurement. That's what I graduated in 1998. And I presented numerous publications in the field of school demography, both in the state and nationally, and have testified as an expert witness a number of times in several administrative law court hearings. One of the things that happens in the state of New Jersey, if you have two districts that more or less want to divorce each other in a sending-receiving agreement, we have to go down this road. I've actually had the opportunity to work with Mr. Gagliardi, ironically, on a few projects of that nature. So what's the purpose of this study? Now, most people think of a demographic study, the first thing that comes to their mind is it's projecting enrollments. That's pretty much all that's to it. It's not. It's way more than that. In fact, there's a litany of items up on the purpose of the study, as you can see. But yes, the first and foremost thing that most people want to know is what's your enrollment going to look like in the next 5 years? And you may say, well, why not 10? Why not 15 years? Well, we have a problem. And it's called, in roughly around, say, 2020, that would be the 2020 kindergarten class. If you back up 5 years, that would be births in 2015. Well, we're only in 2014, so to start estimating how many kids are going to be born in a specific year is very, very difficult. So by just looking out 5 years, we have kids that have been born, at least for the data that we have, and we also have kids that are enrolled in your school district, which makes it easier. So that's why the DOE only wants us to do a five-year projection. Besides that, what else do we look at? We look at what the community population looks like, the school district's enrollments, the birth and fertility rates in your community, which are quite interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit later. The age structure, which means how many people are in certain age brackets, 30 to 39, 40 to 49, things of that nature. What would impacts such as new housing have on the enrollment? That's another thing to consider. The board asked me to look at projecting enrollments under two different scenarios. One, with an existing half-day kindergarten program, as well as expanding to full day. And the last but not least thing we did, which is completely independent from projecting enrollments, is I performed what's called a housing turnover analysis. And we actually project the number of houses that are going to be at certain lengths of ownership into the future and how that may impact future enrollment trends. In other words, if you had a lot of empty nesters sell their home and everyone with families happened to buy those empty nester houses, how would that impact the district? So let's get to the macro of this project, which would be your community. And I'll just refer to Clinton Township. I know it's a borough of Clinton as well. We'll just refer to you as Clinton tonight, or Clinton Township. And this shows the population of Clinton from 1940 up to the present, where that vertical line is, and then going forward another 30 or so years up to 2040. Now, data to the left of that vertical line is from the census. To the right is not projections by me, but by a third-party organization called the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority. And really what you see up there is that most of the growth happened here in the 70s and 80s, and to some respect, a little bit in the 90s, but it's really tapered off. And the North Jersey Transportation Planning Authority expects to be your population to be around 15,000 by 2040. And right now we're about 13.5. What is the profile of your community? Now, interestingly enough, your community is a little bit skewed by the presence of the Mountain View Youth Correctional Facility. And those people, there's about, I think there's 1,200 or so people in that jail. And they're counted under the census counts for Clinton Township. And there's no way of factoring them out. They're in group quarters. We can't get specific data from the census regarding them. So what you're seeing in front of you is a snapshot from the 2010 census of Clinton Township. So you're predominantly white. The second largest race is blacks, African Americans. Now, Hispanics are not a race, according to the Census Bureau, which is kind of ironic because it's incredibly archaic. Most places around the country consider Hispanics to be a race. In fact, the Department of Ed in New Jersey considers them to be a race. However, they are not a mutually exclusive race category for the census. So you can be Hispanic and be part of the white population, the black population, Asian, so on and so forth. About a quarter of your population is under 18. The median age here, which is the 50th percentile, or the midpoint, if you had all the ages rank ordered, is about 41. The state median is about 39. 8% of your population is foreign born, where the state average is 21%. This is a very highly educated community. You have 53% or more than half of your community age 25 and over with a bachelor's degree or higher. That's very high. Median family income over 150,000. Roughly 4,700 housing units, most of them which are single-family homes. There are about 13% of the housing units being renter-occupied. Why do we care about renter-occupied? Because if you have a lot of students in renter-occupied units, they may not stay in your township, in your school district, because there's a higher propensity for students in renters to move in and out of those units more frequently. And the median value of an owner-occupied unit is over 460,000. Again, that's the midpoint. So there's 50% of houses that cost more than that, 50% being lower. This is using mapping software where I actually can pin map where your schools are, so you can see where we are. We're at the left extreme of the township, and you can see Lebanon being in the middle of your township. So let's talk about the school district now. Last October, now remember, this study was completed over the summer. The most recent enrollment we had when we did this study was from the 13-14 school year. And we use the October 15th counts all the time, because when your school district reports enrollment to the state, even though you have June counts and May counts, we always use the October 15th counts just as a matter of being consistent from one year to the next. So as of October, the enrollment was 1562 of last October. In 05-06, that was when your enrollment peaked at about 1818, but it's declined for about 8 consecutive years. And that's about a loss of over 250 students since that peak. And I use something called the cohort survival ratio method to project enrollments. That's not a method that I made up. It's been in existence for about 80 or 90 years, and it's a method approved by the DOE to project enrollments, in this case, for 5 years into the future. So here's a graph showing your enrollment. You can actually see the peak in the 05-06 year, which is the second bar from the left-hand side. That's been going down steadily since. This shows you the enrollment by level, which in your particular district would be, I can almost cross out the word level and put by school, because you have a school for each particular grade configuration. And the interesting ones, the PK to 1 is the green one that's near the bottom of the screen, and you peaked in the PK to 1 at 384. It was about 297 most recently. The 2-3 configuration has also been declined, but if you look at the middle, which is very interesting, that's the middle school. And the middle school really hasn't changed much. The enrollment here has been quite stable. But this diagram, I want you to remember this. We call this the window to the future, because if the lower grades are declining historically, and the upper grades, in this case the middle school and Round Valley, if they're roughly stable, that's not going to last forever, because those cohorts from the lower grades are going to start moving forward into the upper grades, causing the decline later on, at some point, in the middle schools and the 4-6 configuration. Okay, this is where I try to go quickly so I don't bore any of you with the methodology and see glassy eyes, but here's how this works, okay? It's fairly straightforward. What we do is we calculate survival rates from one grade to the next. And I give you a fairly simple example up there. So if you have 100 first graders in 12-13, and you would expect the next year for second grade, you would have approximately 100 second graders as they move from one grade to the next. But let's say you get 95. That survival rate from one grade to the next is 0.95. No one dies here. We're just calculating survival rates from one grade to the next. 1-2, 2-3, 3-4, even birth to kindergarten. And we do this for a number of years. And what we're saying, what we look at is, are your survival rates less than 1, which in this case, in that example up there, would mean you're losing students. Or if it's greater than 1, you have some kind of inward migration going on. Now, in the last 10 years, I computed your survival ratios. And I took the average, and 7 of the 9 average grades, from birth to kindergarten, K to 1, so on and so forth, 7 of the 9 of them were above 1.0, which means you have inward migration, which sounds kind of counterintuitive, because how could you possibly have declining enrollment if you still have inward migration into the district? I'm going to explain that in a moment. So once we compute these average survival ratios, we take your most recent enrollment, which in this case was the 13-14 year, and use those average ratios projecting forward. So there were two sets of projections computed in this study, not only for half day, full day, but I did one based on 4 years of historical data and one on 6. It's just because you have to understand that when you project enrollments, this is not an exact science. There's definitely a lot of variables at play. But we wanted to give you an idea of the trend of what's going to happen in the future rather than exact numbers. The big problem you have in this district is something called negative first grade replacement. It's happened for the last 9 years. Let me explain what that is. Fairly straightforward, it's when the number of eighth grade students is greater than the number of first grade students replacing them in the next year. And you may say, well, why am I not comparing it to kindergarten instead of first grade? And the reason being is with a half-day program for kindergarten, you're gaining a lot of kids in first grade the next year. So it's more appropriate to look at the first grade with respect to eighth grade. So look at the most recent year. Here's what you have. You had 229 eighth graders graduate in 12-13, and they were replaced by 143 first graders. Well, you're 86 students down before the year even begins. So how do you possibly make that up? Well, you need inward migration in the other grades, students moving in from other towns, maybe into the third grade or the fourth grade, to balance out this negative first grade replacement. And you can see this has been going on over the same time period as this 8-year decline in enrollment, as I've discussed at the top. So you can see each year, sometimes you're losing 96, 95 students, near 100 students, just due to this phenomenon. This slide compares the first grade replacement to the total enrollment change in the district. So the first grade replacement is still the one in gray, but to the right of it, I'm showing you what your total enrollment change has been from year to year. And what's interesting here, if you notice, the blue bars are usually, most cases, less than the first grade replacement, which means that some of the loss in the district is being offset by inward migration of students. So now you can see what I was talking about in the beginning, that yes, you can have declining enrollment at the same time having inward migration of students, because what's happening is here, you are having inward migration, but not enough to overcome this phenomenon that's going on behind the scenes called first grade replacement. So how do we get to this problem with first grade replacement? Let's dig a little deeper. It's your birth rates. Okay, so you had 156 births here in 1999 and only 82 about a decade later. That's not quite a half, 50% cut, but you can see it's quite a big decline. We use birth rates to project how many kindergarten students you're going to have 5 years later. And one problem is your fertility rate is very low. There's only 26 births per 1,000 women for Clinton Township, as opposed to Hunterdon County is around 46, and the state is 61. So why there's not as many births going on here, I'm not entirely sure, but we'll explore a little bit more about how that works with your age structure. So this chart here shows the birth year, the number of births by year, and then how many students show up in kindergarten 5 years later. Typically, in most districts that I run into with a half-day K, the survival rate between birth and kindergarten, which is just, for instance, the first column where you see a survival rate, the first row where you see a survival rate all the way on the far right of 0.910, that's just 142 divided by 156. But typically for half-day K programs, the survival ratios are below 1. So what this is telling me here is you probably have a lot of students moving into this community with school-age children to attend kindergarten, even though you have a half-day program. And this picture shows the birth rate. I mean, yes, there are instances where it goes up from 1 year to the next, but that is trajectory downward all the way. Okay, so the age pyramid. This is a demographer's dream to talk about this. This is demography 101. And that big orange line, I'll talk about why that's over there in a moment. So this is from the census 2000. What you're looking at is the percentage of males and females graphed back to back, where the females are in green and the males are in orange. So it tells you the percent of women that are 45 to 49, 50 to 54, so on and so forth. Now, here's what you're seeing. That long left line that extends way out on the left-hand side, that's the males at the correctional facility. This huge number of people in the 20 to 24 group. Okay, so let's ignore them for a moment because it really distorts the picture. What you see here is a predominant number of people in their 40s here back in 2000. Okay, now I'm going to flash this ahead to 2010. Keep an eye on the area of the 40s where the big amount of people are. And you can see the big area has now moved up 10 years to the 50s, which you would expect. They're advancing, this cohort is advancing through time. And of course, you've got this large group down here in the 20s. But watch also the interior of this shape. People in their 30s, watch what happened here. You're losing people in the 30s. It's getting less and less. That is common in, I do a lot of studies. I'd say, 15 to 20 studies a year I do. And for whatever reason, this year I must have done 6 to 7 district studies for District Factor Group I or J. Now, you're a District Factor Group I, which is a wealthier district in the state of New Jersey. With wealthier districts, you have high property values and, associated with that, high property taxes. So what happens is you have this vacancy of people, lack thereof people, in the 20 to 30 group to move in. It's very difficult to move in here. Okay? This is what it's supposed to look like. This is the state of New Jersey. Okay? So you're not unique. There's nothing unique about your diagram. We've seen this over and over. But what does this all mean? A, you're not socioeconomically or racially diverse. And that's a socioeconomic or racially diverse picture. It's almost like if you consider that being like a beehive, you know, or an apple or whatever thing, whatever that looks like to you, someone's taking a bite out of it right there in the 30s and you don't have anything. Now, could that possibly change in the future? Absolutely. But this takes a lot of time for an age pyramid to change. It doesn't happen overnight. Okay, so the next thing I looked at was new housing. How does that impact your enrollment? Well, there were two things I looked at. First were when I contacted planning and zoning, there were about 70 new housing units either under construction, had preliminary approval, or had final approval. And most of them were market rate, single family homes. Then there was another piece of the puzzle where there was the potential for 65 affordable units to be built by 2017 or 18, and another 130 to be built possibly by 2025 to satisfy your COA obligations. Now, the 130 is outside of the enrollment projection time frame, as we discussed, and we only go 5 years into the future. But from what I understand, this may not even happen due to the Highlands. This might get taken up by the Highlands Water Protection Act, where you may not need to build it. But in any event, I looked at what the impact would be if these affordable units were built. So there was little information available on the type of units of those COA units or their bedroom distribution, which is important because more bedrooms equals more kids. So here's the potential new children for these developments that I was able to research from planning and zoning. You can see the number of units and the number of associated K to 8 children, not K to 12, because I'm not worried about high school children. I'm only worried about this district. So you can see there would be a potentially 9 to 12 kids, of course, but I'm only looking at K to 8. And there's a total of about 68 children from the period of time of 2014 to 2018. And in red, 60 additional children from COA units if they are built in 2025. So in the beginning of the study, remember how I told you that your population boomed in the 70s and 80s and somewhat to an extent in the 90s? Well, there you go. Here's how many units were built in the community since prior to 1940 to the present. So about 30%, 29% were built in the 80s. But as you can see, of course, the building boom is pretty much over. So let's get to the nuts and bolts of the study, which is what do the enrollment projections look like? Well, the enrollments are still projected to decline. And this is what you're seeing here are the two projections for the half-day kindergarten program, one based on cohorts on four-year ratios and one with 6, which is in red. The blue is the four-year. So, you know, somewhere around 1,300 students 5 years later is what we're talking about. If we had a full-day program, believe it or not, you're still going to have declining enrollment because this only impacts the kindergarten grade. You're not going to have any change to the other grades. And we're talking about a difference of about 35 to 50 children more in the full-day program as opposed to the half-day program. Now, those were called baseline projections. These are adjusted for the potential housing that is in the ongoing within the township. So, again, still projecting declining enrollment with the half day, and this is showing what it would be with the full day. This chart shows you what the enrollment is by school. So up top is the current enrollment, 297 for PK to 1, all the way across the board to 430 at the middle school. So the projections in blue are for the half-day kindergarten, the projections in red are for the full day. These are all the adjusted enrollment projections, which means assuming that the housing is going to be built and impact the district. I can tell you that if you look at the last two columns, 4 to 6 grades and 7 to 8 grades, remember how we talked about earlier that they're currently stable in enrollment, but they should decline in the future? Look all the way down at the bottom. You're talking about enrollments with a full day K for the 4 to 6 configuration around 468 or 501, depending upon which survival rates we use. And the other one, a decline as well. So the decline is going to eventually happen at the 4 to 6 and 7 to 8 schools as well. The good news, from what I can see, is at the PK to 1 level, it appears to be that enrollment will be stabilizing. The one thing I had to do in this study, which I think I forgot to mention when I went over the birth rates, is that I had to project how many births were actually in 2012 and 2013 and beyond. You might say, why 2012 and 2013? We should have that data. And the answer is yes, we should, but the state, as you know, Trent is a little slow on things, has yet to provide data on births for 12 and 13. So I assume that you would have about 92 births going forward, which is about 10 births higher than you've been experiencing. So I was more conservative because I don't think your birth rates are going to continue declining forever. Otherwise, there'd be nobody here. So eventually, it has to stabilize. And I think the time is probably going to happen pretty soon. So before we move on to the housing turnover analysis, what you're seeing here, finally, is each of the buildings with their capacity, and I'm going to tell you that capacity is not a fixed number. It's how you use the building with your student-teacher ratios and how many students you want in a particular special ed classroom by code, things like that. So that number can vary according to how you use the building. And I'm comparing the capacity to the enrollment currently in 13-14. The half-day kindergarten counts 5 years later, or if you go to a full-day kindergarten 5 years later, and what you can see is that they're all positive differences, meaning that there's excess capacity at all the schools. At McGarren is the biggest one at over 300 seats. So now we move into the last piece of the puzzle here, the last piece of the study tonight, and I'll turn it over for questions to the board. So this housing turnover analysis, you could almost cut this piece off from the presentation and have it as a completely separate analysis independent of the demographic study. And it's where we use houses and not students to project enrollment. And I'm going to be very clear about this. It's in red. This is not used for yearly enrollment projections. This is more or less what we call modeling. What if this happens, or what if that happens? How would it impact your enrollment? If you're really serious about your enrollment projections and how it relates to facilities, you don't use this methodology. You go back and look at the cohort numbers presented earlier tonight. But I wanted to make that right up front and talk about that. So, this was developed by colleagues from mine out of Cal Berkeley. And it was developed about 10 years ago. And what we do, the first input we do, is we get all your home sales data for the last 40 years. I look at every home sale that's happened in Clinton Township since 1973. It's a little monotonous, to say the least. And actually have to screen out home sales that didn't actually, quote unquote, occur because you just transferred the title from one person to another for a dollar. So what we're looking at is housing turnover rates over time, over a 40-year period. And what we find out is that certain homes at lower lengths of ownership, homes that have only been owned 5 years or 6 years or 3 years, are much more likely to sell than a home that's been owned 25 or 30 years. Okay, now you'll see the data to back that up in a moment. The second input we looked at is your current distribution of homes by length of ownership. In other words, after I look at your property sales database, how many homes in this township have been owned 10 years? How many have been owned 7 years? How many have been owned 5? And the last thing is we do is number 3, we pair the student address database to the property database to find out how many kids per housing unit live in homes with 5 years of ownership versus 25 years of ownership. Now, of course, what would you expect? Homes with low lengths of ownership, 3, 2, 4, have many more children than someone who's owned it for 25, 30 years, and their kids are probably graduating through the system. So this next page here talks more about the methodology, which I think I explained. Really what we're doing is we're following a house through its life cycle. And again, a house doesn't die. I'm just referring to about when a house changes hands from one owner to the next. So we have many different things in the database that are interesting to us, the sale dates, the sale prices, and the year the home was built. So we're following each cohort of homes beginning in 1973 to see when they sell. Now, not every home sells, but you can see, here's an example. Say you had a home built in 1940 and it sold three different years, 87, 89, and 95. We can't assume that the first length of ownership is 47 years from 1940 to 1987, because I only had sales data beginning in 73. Perhaps it did sell in 1970. I have no way of knowing. But what I can say is that the first length of ownership for that one house was 2 years, from 87 to 89. The next length of ownership was 6 years, from 89 to 95. And its current length of ownership is 19 years. So this one house is part of three separate cohorts. And you can see how much data you can get just by looking at one house. The more sales for a particular house, the more interesting it is for us as a demographer, because you have a lot of rich data. And this is what the weighted average turnover rates are over the 41-year period look like. In other words, this looks at your average turnover rates through bad times in the housing market, at the 2008-2009 housing crisis, to the boom periods of the early 2000s and late 90s, the whole entire length of the 41 years. It just takes an average. And what you see is when are people most likely to sell their home? It's when they have about 2 or 3 years of homeownership. And what I think is happening in many communities, you're not the only one, a lot of people love to trade up. Bigger house, better house. It wasn't always like that. If you go back to the 1970s data, there were very few sales, because when you bought a home in 1973, there was a very good chance you were going to live in that house for 40 years. My parents actually still own theirs from 1964. So they're an example of that type of mentality, but the mentality has changed, where there are much more sales going on in recent time rather than when you just bought a house and stayed in. Now, all that noise you're seeing down at the end, it looks like there's a lot of high turnover in homes that are owned 35 years. The reality is there's just not that many homes at 35 years length of ownership in your community. So if you just have one or two sales, and that over time, it just adds to the turnover rate. It's kind of, it's really misleading, but it can affect the turnover rate just by a couple of sales because there's not many homes. This is your current length of ownership in the whole community. Look at where most people own their homes. Most around 1 year of ownership. 400 housing units are about 1 year of ownership here. And it goes down from there. So you don't have too many people with 30 years of ownership here. It just doesn't exist. This is the yields by length of ownership. In other words, yields mean number of kids per housing unit. So if you go to the largest one, which is the 10th year of ownership, that's 0.5 children, roughly, per house. So if you have a home, maybe there's some people on the board here that you've owned your home for 10 years and you've got kids in the district, you're contributing to that student yield of 0.52, roughly, kids per household. But what's interesting here is, of course, the yields are pretty stable until, you know, maybe about 12 or 13 years of ownership, and then it just rocks, it just goes straight down. So this is the last piece. How do we use all this data? Well, I take the current length of homeownership distribution, which is one of the previous graphs, and your historical turnover rates, and I either advance the homes to one more year of ownership, or I sell them based on your turnover rates of 3 or 4% of whatever we've seen, and have it return to 0 years of ownership. So what it gives you is a distribution of homes at each length of ownership, and then we multiply that by the student yields at each length of ownership, which was this previous slide right here. We're assuming that to hold constant through the whole entire study. And what it gives us are number of students at each length of ownership. And we then sum them up to tell you how many kids are going to be here. So I did two scenarios for you. One based upon your average historical turnover rates, which looked at bad times and good times for the housing market, that is. And if you do it that way, your enrollment is still projected to decline, but not as much as when I used the cohort survival ratio method. Scenario two, I did the worst case scenario, which means let's get out as many long-held homes out of the distribution as possible. Because if you go back to the slides here, look at the homes that have very high lengths of ownership, 20 or more years. Their yields are very, very, very small. For your enrollment to increase, we have to reduce or sell those homes, get them out of 20 years plus of ownership, get them into 0 years of ownership to maximize where the high yields are to get more kids in the district. So what I did is I maximized the historical turnover rates from 19 plus years of home ownership and saw what that would do. And that would be more or less if most senior citizens and empty nesters sold their house all at once, or highest if we've ever seen, what would that impact in the district? And the impact would not be as great as I thought. The enrollment would still be projected to decline, but only to 1,470 students, which is about 63 students more than the previous scenario. So again, this is what we call, this housing turnover analysis is called modeling. It's a what-if scenario. And to answer the long story here, what's the point? The point is, if you did have a mass amount of selling going on, higher than what you've seen historically, you're not going to see an increase in your enrollment due to that phenomenon. And with that, I'll open it up to questions.
Okay. Any members of the board have any questions for Dr. Griff?
I just want to go back to one of your previous comments. You said you had done about 6 or 7 studies with District Factor IJ groups. Does your presentation tonight look similar in those districts?
Well, the picture, I mean, yes, the answer, yes. So the picture of those age sex diagrams, I mean, we can cross out your township and pretty much put in, say, Booton and get something similar. I mean, it's not exact, of course, but right. The shape is looking the same, yeah.
Thanks.
Two questions, and I have more. With the cohort survival ratio, what do you currently see as the standard deviation? And is the survival ratio as represented here and the standard deviation generally applicable to neighboring communities? In other words, whatever you see there for Clinton Township, would that also apply to the boroughs and townships that are adjacent to us?
Well, that's a good question, because there are instances of clients that I work with where municipalities right next to them are completely different. You know, I did not study all the communities around here, but from what I know of Hunterdon County, most of the communities in this county are experiencing declining enrollment. So I would suspect that if we had conversations with other districts, we would get the same answer here. I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that for sure.
What would be the standard deviation of this analysis?
Well, what we look for here, that's a good question. What we look for in terms of accuracy is a 1% error rate per year. So at the end of the 5-year period, in 2018-19, if you decide to call me back at that point in time, am I within 5% of what I projected? And if I am, that's acceptable in the industry. And typically when I work with districts, I'm less than the error rate, which is the industry standard, which in 1 or 2% in the first 2 years, I'm usually less than. Yes?
I have a question, please. Does school choice change or impact your enrollment projections at all?
Well, you know, I looked at that. The question was about school choice. School choice, I believe you only have about 13 or 14 students in the program for school choice this year. And by what I, it's more than that?
Yeah, I have 85.
85?
85.
Okay. Well, what I did was, I looked at the historical enrollment prior to school choice and after school choice. And I computed the survival ratios before and after. And what I saw was that even with school choice happening, the survival ratios before school choice were above 1. So what that indicates to me is that you're having inward migration into this district with or without school choice. That is not the issue here. School choice is not causing enrollments to go up from an inward migration standpoint. I believe the inward migration we've talked about is, quite frankly, due to your district. I mean, you're an excellent school district. People want to come to bring their kids here. They're moving in for that express purpose. And that's what I feel is causing this inward migration, although not enough to offset the declining enrollment.
Thank you.
Trends. I first saw in 1984 construction of a high-rise building in the city of San Francisco across the street from 333 Market Street, about 40 stories. Lower half commercial, upper half residential. Last week, I came back from San Francisco. Currently, there are 33 or 34 cranes operating, building high-rise buildings. And all of those are having somewhat of a similar design, in that more than half of those buildings will have roughly 50% commercial, roughly 50% residential. And what that seems to be, or what I'm told, or was told by planners out there, is that that has to do with millennials, and also helicopter parents, which I found the relationship interesting, wanting to live and have the city experience, yet the majority of the people expected to move into those buildings and have already moved into similar buildings actually work in the city of San Jose. Now, that's roughly a 50 to 60 mile commute, and so firms such as Google are creating buses and moving them out. What impact might we see in an environment like Clinton Township, where we have neither the employer to attract, in other words, the Google or others in Silicon Valley, to bring people to this area, yet we may see many individuals in the millennial generation wanting to move into a large metropolitan area, whatever that would be in Newark, New York City, et cetera. What impact might that have on our look at planning for the future?
That's a good question. Well, this is just, again, a personal opinion. I don't have any, this is just my conjecture, is that I have a feeling, you're right on, what I've been reading as well is that a lot of the millennials really do not want to purchase right now. They're more interested in renting. And this community is not really set up for that type of environment. And again, you're very far, relatively speaking, from any kind of large city such as New York or Philadelphia. I think what you're not attracting those folks. I think you're going to continue to attract families that are already, you have children born in other communities. And those are the families that are going to have to move in. I don't see people buying something in here in their 20s and staying here throughout and then having their kids while they're in their 20s and early 30s. You're going to have to continually rely on people moving in from surrounding communities, bedroom, suburban community. I can't imagine it's going to be an urban situation, obviously.
In an environment like Clinton Township, where you're looking at an income of 150K, are we likely to see similar numbers from cohort survival studies as we go forward? Or with our changing demographic, is it likely to be more negatively impacting than positively impacting?
Beyond the 5 years, again, it's anyone's guess, but if the birth rates do stabilize, and if the full-day K program was to be instituted, I think that would, of course, help stabilize the PK to 1 population, and then as those kids move up, that will stabilize the upper grades as well. I have to say, from my experience, here's what I usually see. We usually see about a 25 to 30 year difference in between peak-to-peak enrollment or trough-to-trough enrollment. So, you know, sometimes it takes a while for this thing to work itself out. Even if you had a plethora of people moving in, with young children ages 1 and 2, you're not going to see them for 3 years. This just does not happen overnight. Some of my colleagues, when I'm working in New York City right now, we just had this discussion a couple weeks ago, is that we expect birth rates to continue this decline, I'm going to say nationally. I'm not going to say right here because, as we know, everything's different. But what we do expect is that the grandchildren of the boomers will start having their kids in the 2020s, the early period of that, which will then start the birth rates to go up. But even if that happens, it takes 5 years to get them into school, so now you're talking 2025. Which is 10 years from now. Could you see declining enrollment for 10 years? Well, I'm already projecting 5, so to look out another 5, it could decline, but maybe not as much as what I'm projecting for the first 5 years here.
Historically, when do you see, or when do you tend to see, a reversal of that social economic condition?
Well, it typically, you know, this is interesting because it's really going to have to be going on back to the birth rates, in my opinion. I think that's what's going to have to start this because, of course, we all, if you looked at my first slide tonight, my first slide shows that Clinton Township has always gone up in terms of its overall population. But the school population is not lock in step with the municipal population. It,